Welcome back. I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We are podcasting our show. You can find out more information at kalw.org, where you can also listen to our past shows. And if you have a show idea for us, you can drop us a line at yourcall@kalw.org. Well, now we're going to turn to a New York Times investigation about Kinney County, which sits along Texas's border with Mexico. The county has collected some $1.7 million in bail from migrants who were deported before they could return to make their court appearances and get that money back. Here to talk about this report is Jack Herrera, award-winning independent reporter covering the border and Latino communities. His work has appeared in The New Yorker, The Atlantic, Politico magazine, The Guardian, and elsewhere. And you can read his piece titled, "For One Texas County, Arresting Migrants Made Big Money." We have that posted on our website at kalw.org. Click on News and then on Your Call to read that piece. And I should also mention that Jack wrote a piece in The New Yorker about the detention of migrant families in Texas. We also have a link to that piece on Your Calls page at kalw.org. So Jack Herrera, welcome back. It's great to have you with us on the program again.
Great to be back. Thank you, Ethan.
So I know you spent a year investigating how this border county is profiting off of undocumented migrants. And before we dive in and talk about that investigation, because I know there's a lot to talk about there, I wanted to get your take first on the recent raids by ICE and Homeland Security that have been covered in the media. And just to get your take on the media coverage of those raids, and what do you think the media may have missed when it comes to how it covers what's going on right now with ICE and Homeland Security?
Yeah, you know, I think that there's this interesting dynamic in the media, I call it the Trump effect in immigration coverage, where you see a lot of, you see more attention towards immigration enforcement when Trump is in office. And so ICE raids were happening under Biden. There was actually a record number of deportations in Biden's last year in office. And so a lot of this isn't new. And so I think it's really important for the media to describe, here's business as usual under both parties in the White House, and here's what's new. And there are expansions. Like, the number of deportations actually has not increased markedly. What has changed is the people that ICE is going after. And so under Biden and under past Democratic presidents like Obama, there's been a prioritization, and actually under Bush as well, prioritization of what I've heard, you know, officials call the worst of the worst. So people with criminal records, people, charged with crimes in their home countries, basically people who the government has determined are dangerous, that's who ICE gets priority to go after. That has changed under Trump, where now the prerogative is just get as many people as possible. We're trying to boost our numbers as much as we can. So just go get anyone, regardless of whether or not they have a criminal record, whether they're, you know, their families have been living here for a long time, go arrest them. And part of how they're accomplishing that is the raids are increasing the use of what they call collateral arrest, which is you have somebody in mind, you're going to go arrest. You know, somebody, you know, you have their name, you have their face, you go into a building, go to an apartment building, workspace, wherever you're performing these raids, you arrest that person. But while you're there, there's other people there. And so you say, show me your papers. Like, you know, are you a citizen? And if you meet other people who don't have citizenship, you arrest them as well. And so that's why these raids, I think, are important to cover in the media and why they're more intense and traumatic for communities, because it's like casting, instead of throwing a fishing line in the water, it's like casting a net in the water and catching as many people as possible on these raids.
And is some of this that the administration is trying to use the media to instill a sort of sense of fear among immigrant populations, you know, high profile raids, taking pictures for social media? I mean, it's some of it about really trying to make a demonstration of a crackdown to try to encourage immigrants potentially to self-deport or otherwise just essentially become so terrified in this country that they no longer wish to stay here.
Yeah, I think the Trump administration is extremely savvy about their media strategy when it comes to immigration enforcement. You see Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristen Noem, basically being followed around by a production team, participating, going to a lot of these raids, you know, posing with guns and protective vests on. And I think that there is a two-pronged strategy. That is to send a message to immigrants. They do want to encourage self-deportations. They are really pushing a crackdown on all sorts of levels, not just enforcement, but also cutting off any form of, you know, people who have any sort of legal status, you know, ability to access some basic government services, making sure that's all cut off, and then enforcing this crackdown. They do want people to self-deport. They want people gone. But it's also a way to send a very satisfying message to a base that elected this administration to be extremely energetic and extremely rigorous in enforcing immigration. There's a large majority of the Republican base and a pretty significant percentage of the whole country that is really interested in mass deportation. And so by making sure that it stays in the headlines, that these images are proliferated, it's the Trump administration's way of trying to signal to their base, we're keeping the promise, we're giving you what you want, we're bringing the pain to the people who are in the country illegally.
Well, and along those lines, NBC reports that Department of Homeland Security Secretary Noem, as you just referenced, is in talks with a reality TV show producer about a game show in which immigrant contestants would compete for U.S. citizenship. So just to really underscore, I mean, you can think, make of that what you will from a moral perspective, but their desire to really showcase their attitudes and crackdown on immigrants really seems to be a strong part of their media strategy. But I do want to get to your investigative piece. It's quite a story, focuses on Kinney County, which, as I mentioned, is along Texas's border with Mexico. It's a population of just over 3,000 people that's been profiting off of migrants who are basically paying their bail to be freed from jail, but not able to return to reclaim that money. And the county is keeping that money. So first, can you talk about how did you find out about this story? What led you to want to investigate further?
Yeah, it was almost 2 years ago now where I got a tip from some sources who are working in and around the county. And they told me you should look into bail, like people who are paying bail after getting arrested in this county. And so I went down to Kinney, and what you have to understand is that in 2021, Texas started trying to enforce immigration law through a pretty novel and creative legal strategy. They couldn't actually arrest people for crossing the border. That's a federal crime. But they realized that as soon as you cross the Rio Grande, if you step on private property, somebody's ranch or some other landowner, you're committing a state crime. So let's arrest people for the state crime of misdemeanor private trespass. And so they started arresting hundreds, thousands of people, focused on a few counties, among them Kinney, this very tiny rural county. It's basically just thorn brush and ranch land. And so they're arresting thousands of people, and they're putting them in a central jail, this prison that the state converted into a jail to hold large number of migrants arrested in different counties. And I spoke to one guy, this guy Juan Antonio Gomez Torres, who paid his bail. He's like, I don't want to sit in jail. I'm gonna pay my bail. I'm gonna get out. And so he paid. And while he was technically released, what it looked like is his jailers, you know, took him outside the jail, handed him to ICE. They put him in a van, and it was hours later he was deported to Mexico. And so he was deported, and you're supposed to, you know, you're supposed to get your bail back, right? Bail's not a fee. It's a sort of collateral you're paying to say I'm gonna show up to court. And he wanted to show up to court. He planned to show up to court to get his money back. But he was in Mexico and he couldn't get back across the border to go to court. And so what happens to the $1,000 bail he paid? It goes into Kinney County's coffers. And that's the case with thousands of other migrants. So the county has made as much as $1.7 million from forfeiting bail from people in this position, people who were deported over the border and just couldn't get back to their court date.
It's really shocking. $1.7 million from some of the most impoverished people on earth. And if you're just joining us, this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind, and we're speaking with Jack Herrera, award-winning independent reporter covering the border and Latino communities, about his investigative piece for the New York Times titled 41 Texas County Arresting Migrants Made Big Money. And the number to call to join the conversation if you have questions for Jack about what's happening along the border, if you have reactions to this story about how Kinney County is keeping this bail money that it should be returning to migrants who are deported. We would love to hear from you. Phone lines are open, and the number to call is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255, or send us an email to yourcall at kalw.org. Well, Jack, it truly is a shocking story that you've uncovered and delved into in quite some depth in this story. Can you tell us more about Kinney County? Why did this place in particular become a hotspot for migrants trying to enter the United States?
That's a great question. You know, Kinney County is it's a lot wider than the surrounding counties. You have a lot of ranchers who are large-scale ranch owners who, these are kind of funny ranches. The brush is too dense to really do cattle ranching. So most of the people who are ranching down there are, you know, hobby ranchers, you know, people who are, you know, live in Austin or Dallas or something, but have their family ranch down there. Or it's big game ranches where there's, you know, zebras and antelope and, you know, exotic game for people to come hunt. And so you have a local population that tends to be more conservative than other counties along the border and has connections to the state Republican Party. So when you start Operation Lone Star, when the state starts this operation of arresting migrants for crossing on trespassing, this is just a natural county for it to start. It's also a place where a lot of people try to cross the border illegally because it's so remote and it's dense brush. It's a place where you can avoid border patrol if you're crossing the border. And so in 2021, especially, you do have a lot of people crossing. So, and there is an epidemic of trespassing. There's people cutting, you know, holes in barbed wire, knocking down fences, driving entire trucks over cattle gates. It's a real problem. And so the county did need to do something about that. So that was happening elsewhere. What makes Kinney interesting is how intensely they pursued people even after they'd been deported. Other counties deported people and said, you know what, our ultimate goal was to just get people, you know, arrest people for crossing the border. They're out of the country now. They've spent time in jail. They paid bail. Let's just dismiss their case. They can get their bail back. Kinney said, no, if you don't show up for court, I don't care if you're deported. I don't care if you're in Mexico or Honduras. If you don't show up for court, we're keeping your money. We're going to go after you as hard as we possibly can. And we're going to try and get you to pay. And so that's what really makes the difference is Kinney's just really intense focus on this money, this punitive measure. And also just, it was a way to really increase the county budget. You know, the $1.7 million, that's enough to pay for like the county judge and county attorney office combined for more than 3 years to fund the entire sheriff's department for well over a year. Mm-hmm. It's a tiny county and this is serious money for them.
Yeah, that really struck me as well. And we did get a question in Adam in Berkeley just wrote in to ask, what is the county doing with the money? If the county's only got 3,000 people, they got $1.7 million. Were you able to uncover where that money went?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, the county really fought me over these public records requests I filed. So I did the best I could with the budget documents I had. And it's hard when the money becomes a whole slush fund. But what I can tell you is when I went to Kinney, I walked around the sheriff's office and I saw brand new trucks, brand new police trucks outside the sheriff's office. And I looked into the budget documents of the county attorney who's prosecuting these cases and the county judge who's sort of, you know, his title's judge, but he's basically the mayor of the county. Both him and the county attorney gave themselves substantial raises and hired new staff. And so you see the county, basically the people prosecuting and arresting these people, you see that their budget's increasing pretty significantly under Operation Lone Star. And so some of that money is coming in from the migrants, you know, the bail and the fees they're charging the migrants. Some of it's new money coming in from Austin to support their operations. But let's just put it simply that the county has found ways to spend this money. They found ways to put it to use, as it were.
Well, I guess I'm not surprised they weren't too responsive when you tried to find out what happened to the money. Now, how is this legal that they're able to keep the bail money? As you say, it's not a fee. That is a processing fee for them to appear in court. It's collateral, as you mentioned. And the only reason they're not able to come back to court is because they've been deported. They're in this catch-22. So how is that legal?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question, Ethan. And I think this is something that this story is specifically about a Texas county, right? But it's something that we can underline for all of the listeners, you know, whether or not you're Berkeley, Oakland, San Francisco, wherever you're listening to this, is the fact that ICE can arrest people who are defendants in a criminal trial at any time. There's no law preventing that. In fact, county attorneys, prosecutors, not just that, you know, DAs all over the country right now are complaining that they have people that they're prosecuting for assault or for serious crimes, and they want to send them to prison to serve their time. And before they can prosecute these people or finish their cases, ICE is arresting them and deporting them really quickly. And there's really no laws governing this or preventing it. Like ICE's own policy says, well, we try our best to work with prosecutors and not direct criminal cases. But in practice, ICE deports defendants. It deports plaintiffs. It deports witnesses, like all sorts of subjects to the criminal justice system. They're getting deported when they're due in court. And so they're being just hustled out of the country. Mm-hmm. And so what this really highlights is the sort of wacky interaction between the immigration enforcement system and the criminal justice enforcement system. There really is, I think, like a real dearth of laws governing how those systems interact. And it really frustrates prosecutors around the country that they have defendants being deported. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like it frustrated Kinney County prosecutors, because what they basically got is a situation where, okay, wait, we arrested this person, we got them deported, and now we get to just keep their bail. Cool, that works for us. Like we'll declare them a failure to appear, basically, you know, open up arrest warrant and consider this almost a successful prosecution in absentia. We keep the money, they've been deported, they've been punished. Great, works well for us. And that's the complicated thing here, which is that different courts have weighed on this different ways, but some courts have said, okay, if you're deported and you don't show up for bail, your bail's forfeit. It really comes down to whether or not you think getting deported is an uncontrollable circumstance. Mm-hmm. You know, judges will be, if you were like in hospital or, you know, otherwise like unable to come to court and you had a good reason, judges will listen to that and say, okay, you know, we won't deprive your bail. You had a good reason not to show up for court. But different judges consider deportation differently. Some judges think, okay, that is a good excuse. Let's not deprive your bail. Let's give you a chance to come back to court. Other judges say, you know what? It's not an uncontrollable circumstance. It's your own personal responsibility that you failed to show up to court. And so you're not getting your bail back, even though you're deported. So it's not I think that to underline all this is it's a very murky, weird legal limbo. It's not really clear what the law is here. And there's really sort of a dearth of laws explaining how this is all supposed to work.
Well, this is along these lines. We have a question in Roberta in San Francisco who wrote into what you just mentioned to some extent. Is this a nationwide practice? What do other counties do in this situation? Were you able to uncover other counties that are keeping this bail money like the way Kinney County is?
Yeah, I mean, it does happen. I mean, there's other cases elsewhere like Colorado. Colorado higher court actually made a different decision, said that, hey, a man had been deported. He should get his bail money back. So it happens all over the place. I mean, you see, there's also a recent colleagues of mine at the New York Times reported a story earlier this month about a collection of DAs, you know, prosecutors around the country complaining that they keep having defendants deported. And so it really, I mean, there's a bunch of people who are deported after they've paid bail. And it really comes down to a case-by-case basis about whether or not the judge in the case, the prosecutor in the case, decides to deprive them of their bail. But the basic answer to Roberta's question is this happens all over the place, all the time, every day, in every city, every state around the country.
Well, I also wanted to ask you about this sort of so-called prison industrial complex, where you have these private prisons that make a lot of money holding detainees and other people accused of crimes, and in some cases convicted of crimes. So if they're deporting a lot of people involved in the criminal justice system, is there a tension with these private prison interests that would rather see them held here in the United States?
Yeah, Ethan, that's a great question. And I think really the simple answer, like the simplest answer, is that there's a ton of money in immigration enforcement. This is just one facet. Like one county's found a way to actually earn money off the migrants themselves. But private prisons often make money off migrants by factory assembly lines inside these private prisons where people work for pennies on the dollar, you know, like, and that's not even an exaggeration. They're working for like cents an hour. Like it's really, really, you know, sub minimum wage incarcerated labor. And so that those private prison companies make a lot of money. Places like the GEO Group are running a lot of the immigration detention centers around the country. CoreCivics, another major private prison operator, operates these places. And they've really followed a, you know, sort of business model, which is just simple. Like let's increase, like decrease expenses as much as possible. Let's make the food as cheap as possible. Let's make the upkeep as little as possible. Let's make the healthcare costs as little as possible. Sort of, you know, consultant class 101, like let's just cut costs. And of course, cutting those costs then cuts services to the people in those jails. Mm-hmm. And so I think that you're right. This is an industry. It's a business. And I think what Kinney County shows is that when you're talking about immigration enforcement, especially under the Trump administration, plenty of Americans, tons of polling shows that people do want to crack down. A large number of Americans want to crack down on immigration. That's what they want. That's what they want to see. Mm-hmm. That's what they voted for when they voted Trump into office. But something for us to keep in mind is that there are other ulterior motives and other interest groups who don't just want to see sort of justice or the rule of law under our immigration system. They want to make money off of this process. And there's been a huge surge in requests for contract from private prison companies and other contractors to massively increase the detention space, massively increase the deportation infrastructure. There are industries making tons of money off of this.
That's such a great point about the dynamics, and we're almost out of time, but it's just talking about those interests. I do want to touch on your report in your piece in the New Yorker about what's happening in the U.S. with family detention centers. Can you just briefly talk about what's going on there?
Yeah. What you see is under the Biden administration, the families are being detained on the border when they're first encountered. But what you really see under the 4 years of Biden is they shut down the main ICE detention centers where, you know, thousands of families at a time were detained. And Trump, within weeks of getting back to office, has reopened those detention centers. And so you're seeing a lot of families detained. What's interesting is that there's very few families crossing the border right now. There's a huge decline in crossings throughout all of 2024, including under Biden. And of course, the numbers have continued to plummet under Trump. And so as they're opening way more detention space, opening up thousands and thousands of beds to detain more families, the question everyone has is where these families are going to come from. And what we're seeing really, this is sort of a change. ICE used to normally just, you know, arrest families and then release them with ankle monitors, otherwise on parole before they were deported, or just deport them quickly. But you wouldn't arrest somebody in, say, Chicago or Omaha and then take them to a detention center. That's changing. What they're doing is they are arresting people in the interior of the country, arresting entire families and bringing them to these detention centers. And that's, you know, that's something new, and especially highlighted by the fact that many of these people being arrested with children have citizen children. So at various times, you've seen families detained with their children who are U.S. citizens and deported with their children who are U.S. citizens.
Well, it's such a major story, and I really do hope listeners can check out your piece in the New Yorker. Unfortunately, we're out of time. There's more we could discuss, but really appreciate you coming on here and telling us about what's happening in Kinney County and more broadly with immigration enforcement in this country. Jack Herrera, award-winning independent reporter with the piece "For One Texas County, Arresting Migrants Made Big Money." That is at our website, kalw.org. Jack, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Ethan.
That's our show. Your Call is produced at KALW in San Francisco. Follow us on social media. Email any show ideas and feedback to yourcall@kalw.org. Malihe Raza is on produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Ethan Elkind. It's Your Call.